Hey, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. This is Desert Oracle Radio Replay broadcasting on KGVM Radio 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm your host, Roxana. Here we are, summer solstice in the rear view, and ahead, that holiday wrought with identified lights and loud booms lighting up the night sky. Hey, everybody, stay safe on that one. Well, Ken Lane just released a new episode on June 23rd, 2026, and I have it just for you right now. Here is Summer Solstice Verse and the Desert Doctor's Weird Bird.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert on this first week after summer solstice. But it's that sort of nighttime when it stays pretty hot. Been sort of hazy and half cloudy these last weeks of official spring. Pretty warm out and also a lot more humidity than we're used to. That usually comes later in summer, the monsoon season. But solstice is our measuring stick for the calendar year out here and everywhere else, so it's officially summer now. The true beginning of summer in the American desert, the lower elevations and lower latitudes in particular, starts in the springtime. Some places, like Borrego Springs in mid-February, it's already summertime when it's still winter for the people up north. Like the Yankees up in the Northeast, or even the people in the High Sierra, who are often snowed in for another several months. They're just going crazy up there. Like Jack Nicholson in The Shining, bouncing his baseball off the wall. Like Steve McQueen in The Great Escape. Hoping the snowplows break through Tioga Pass before the real craziness begins. Donner party time. I was up at the Awani Hotel once when they were getting ready for their big Christmas pageant, a beautiful event, a formal party like they used to hold up there a century ago. And I said to one of the decorators, "You ever do a Donner party theme?" And the guy hissed at me like a snake, like a Gila monster. That's a strange way to act around a paying guest. I was even wearing a suit and tie, had my hair combed and everything. Anyway, we were talking about summertime, weren't we? Because that's what it is, official or otherwise. And now that we've reached that part of the year, the halfway point, midsummer, those of us who, for whatever reason, are pretty much stuck in the desert even after the tourist and the stagecoach performers go back home, well, our desert stories get a little grimier, a little weirder. They are less about wild adventures, beautiful sights and inspiration, and strange phenomena. And they're more about just trying to survive, just trying to get through the day, get through the week, the month. Like my rock squirrels out back who just come to my patio doors and glare inside when their water bowl is empty. They have little hands, as you know, and they shield their eyes with their little hands to block the sun's glare on the glass. I could take a video of exactly that, the rock squirrel looking inside with its little squirrel hands blocking the glare. Put that thing on TikTok and it would have a trillion views. It'd be the world's second trillionaire, just like that. But I don't want to exploit the squirrel that way. Plus, I know in my heart that as soon as I picked up the phone and aimed it at the patio glass door, that squirrel would vanish in a puff of smoke. And the smoke wouldn't show up in the picture either. So why even try? Why live that way? Always trying to prove it. See, I told you that squirrel salutes me. And even if I did get the video, if I set it up on the security camera when I'm not even there, everybody would automatically believe it's AI.
Desert Oracle Radio.
Halfway through 20 and 26, midsummer. I hope your year is going pretty well so far. And if not, I hope the second half is better for you. And on this midsummer eve in a secret grove near Athens, a fairy speaks. Over hill, over dale, through a bush, through a briar, over park, over pale, through a flood, through a fire. I do wander everywhere, swifter than the moon's spear. And I serve the fairy queen to dew her orbs upon the green. The cowslips tall her pensioners be. In their gold coats spots you see, those be rubies, fairy favors. In those freckles live their saviors. I must go seek some dewdrops here and hang a pearl in every cowslip's ear. Farewell, thou lob of spirits, I'll be gone. Our queen and all her elves come here anon. And that's from Will Shakespeare, of course, from A Midsummer Night's Dream. Over hill, over dale. I was reciting some lines by Shakespeare somewhere in context and conversation. And some guy looks up at me and says, I did not know Shakespeare was generally performed by Andrew Jackson. Oh, a wiseacre. But you know, the linguists say that Southern American speech, especially that preserved in the back hollers of Appalachia, is most like Shakespeare's English. And when you try to rhyme words like fire and where, that becomes very apparent. Fire, where, where. But it's in that old song from the Hee Haw Show. You ever hear that? Where are you tonight? Why did you leave me here all alone? Speaking of that sort of accent, here's a little bit of verse from one of Sam Clemens' books. Warm Summer Sun by Mark Twain. Warm summer sun, shine kindly here. Warm southern wind, blow softly here. Green sod above, lie light, good night, dear heart, good night, good night. In 1946, it was kind of the last days of a bohemian community living in the canyons around what is now Palm Springs. And these were real bohemians. These were artists, sculptors, and naturalists, and these naked people. And what else were they? Oh, there were some Buddhists, you know, all the ists. And they lived in little shacks made of plywood and tar paper and such up in the canyon, Tonquitz Canyon over Palm Springs. One of these guys had become famous in, oh, was it Coldwater Canyon? In Los Angeles, I think, as one of this group of nudists, vegetarians, philosophers, meditation people, etc. And this guy is a very beautiful man, a big, tall man with a long head of hair and a big, long beard. And this was in the 30s and 40s, I believe. And he inspired the song that became a big hit for Nat King Cole called Nature Boy. And he was one of the guys who lived in the artist cabin community up around Palm Springs. Another was a pioneering desert biologist who was, I think, an assistant professor initially at the University of Riverside. And he was known for collecting groups of people to go out to have desert campouts. And they'd go investigate different places. He'd notice a place on a map or from an airplane or from driving around and say, let's go out there and see what's out there. So in 1946, this guy, whose name is Dr. Edmund Yeager, a name worth remembering because he has written the best books on desert animals and desert wildflowers. And he titled them very simply, Desert Animals and Desert Wildflowers. They're still in print. You can get them, last I checked, at the Joshua Tree Visitor Center. The University of Riverside Press continues to keep them in print in beautiful trade paperback editions. Any desert lover must have Edmund Yeager's books. The reason is because Jaeger was not like professors who write books today, which is they write books based on other books. All the footnotes are other historians in their field. Jaeger was a field historian. He was out there. So he's walking through. If you've been out into the Badlands, east of Palm Springs, of Indio, etc., you'll find that there are these narrow, winding canyons, sand on the bottom, and worn rock walls on the sides. Not the big dramatic ones like in Utah, or in certain parts even of southern Nevada. But they're sort of out-of-the-way places that people didn't go too much because not a great place to live. Three-quarters of the year, it's an oven. This was south of Desert Center, which is an exit on the I-10 if you're going to Arizona from Palm Springs. Right after you go by all the restaurant billboards and say, last chance to go to Chick-fil-A or whatever. Because then you're out in the real desert. And there's not much out there until you get to and across the Colorado River. Once you cross the Colorado River, it's a very interesting geological feature. Gas is $3 a gallon less. It's an interesting thing to be in Needles early in the morning on a work day. Everybody goes across the river, gets gas, and then comes back and drives by the gas stations nobody ever wants to stop at because it's $5 or $6 a gallon instead of $3.50 on the other side. Dr. Jaeger and a bunch of his student helpers are walking through this canyon. Very low canyon. The walls are just kind of worn down rock. And there's little shelves of sorts. Notches, niches, whatever you want to call them, in the walls of the canyon. And he walks up to one, and there's something, what appears to be a dead bird, smashed up against the rock. And it's windy, as it sometimes is in the desert all the time, so its little feathers are being blown around. It just looks like a terrible accident. He picks up the bird, looks at it. This bird's alive. When the students gather around, it doesn't look alive. No, it's alive. It is experiencing torpor, which was something that was unknown in birds until that moment in time. Now, sure, other people around the world throughout history have come across a bird that was experiencing torpor during the cold months, but there was no record of it, no writing. So he picks up this bird and he's like, well, look at this. This is a common nightjar. Anyone know what a nightjar is? Terrible name for a bird. A nightjar, sometimes called a nighthawk, is a nocturnal kind of stunted owl. It's a weird-looking little bird. It makes a terrible sound, too. I have one that hangs out on my porch light at home. And it makes kind of a sound. It's the kind of song that makes a raven sound musical. Being a biologist, he has bird bands. He bands the bird on one of its feet and says, I'll be back. He comes back to see it a couple of weeks later. It's still there. It hasn't moved. It's like if you took a dead bird and threw it at a rock and it's stuck. It's the least safe or comforting place you could possibly choose for something like torpor, which is winter hibernation. And yet there it is. He goes back to work in Riverside, where he has written to a couple of biologist friends around the country and around the world. And one of them, I believe in Germany, where there were, Germany was known for excellent scientific instruments at the time. It still is, but it was kind of the world leader in such things. There's a package, and it's a bunch of bird thermometers. So a bird thermometer, but it doesn't go down the beak, is what I'm saying. So he takes the bird thermometers, goes back to the canyon, just south of Desert Center, off today's Interstate 10. It's still there. He takes the night jar, inserts the thermometer. Yes, it's alive and only a couple of degrees cooler than a night jar in active good health. The first time a hibernating bird had ever been verified. He wrote up a paper. The paper was published by the Nature Conservancy California member journal. At that point, almost all scientists, biologists, a few hobbyists. And through that process, we learned that birds, like other animals, bears, what else hibernates? Well, that's summer. That's estivate, right? So they do the opposite. When it's too hot, they shut down. When it's too cold, other animals shut down. And what Dr. Yeager found is that these same night jars came back year after year to just sort of smack against the most uncomfortable little notch in the rock and spend 8-10 weeks there. It's miserable. If you were a very tall coyote, you could walk through these canyons and just pick them off like going through a buffet. But they weren't there. No one was there. So the night jars, which in good weather come to life, and they have very big mouths, and they hop around getting moths and other sort of insects that are out at night. That was their haven. So when you're walking around the desert, I don't mean the most popular trail in Joshua Tree or Zion or Yosemite or whatever, but even just off, a quarter mile, a half mile away, you can come across things that no one has ever seen. We learn of this again and again. I was looking at the European news the other day, and another child, this one in Norway, was on a nature trip with her parents, and she went into a little lake and noticed something under her foot and pulled it out. It was a Iron Age sword, more than 2,000 years old, pre-Viking. So there are secrets if you just wander around. Sometimes the secrets are natural, sometimes the secrets are things left by your fellow humans. I was walking in a section of preserve land a couple of years ago with my dog, and I came around a little bend in the trail. I was looking for one of those Mylar balloons that I'd seen tangled up in a bush, and I was going to walk over there and get it. Don't mind the coyotes. They're only interested in rats, most of all. And I came across a 8 or 10 foot pentagram made of rocks on the ground where some witch is, probably from Echo Park or something, were doing God knows what, going skyclad or something. And there it was, and I took a picture of it, and a bunch of nature people left angry comments on my Instagram. That's dumb, you should have torn it up. It's just rocks. It wasn't like it was, you know, made of LED light strips or something. And there are secrets. I find secrets all the time. My dog finds secrets I don't want to know about. Sometimes I'm looking for more recent American verse about the mystical beauty of the American frontier, the Western wilderness. And I remember that poetry and song have long been separate streams. So what I'm looking for doesn't show up on the poetry websites because it's mostly under copyright. As popular song, Hank Williams was known and celebrated as the hillbilly Shakespeare of his day. Merle Haggard was widely praised as the poet of the common man. And Bob Dylan wrote his Nobel Prize-winning poetry to the melodies of ancient troubadour styles from Europe and the British Isles and the mountain hollers, where the very oldest songs were preserved in the amber of isolation. Thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver for our soundscapes tonight. Thanks to everybody who came to our springtime series of Desert Oracle Campfire Stories. That's the last of such standalone events. But as I mentioned a while back, there's a 2-day festival in Pioneertown coming up August 14 and 15th. The Pappy and Harriet's, Desert Willow Ranch, etc., plus stargazing, DJ sets, all kinds of electronic and ambient musical artists such as Tangerine Dream and Steve Roach. A showing of Welcome Space Brothers. And both nights, Desert Oracle, they've got us off in some little cowboy town on the side. It'll be fun. It's called Spacecraft, and the promoters have a website at Spacecraft Joshua Tree. 1- and 2-day tickets are on sale now. And you know the best Civil War songs since Stephen Foster were done by 4 Canadians and an Arkansas hillbilly in a group called The Band. Team USA won their soccer game against whoever they were playing, and everybody started singing Take Me Home Country Roads, a song from 1971 that could have been from 1871. Thank you for listening tonight. Happy summer solstice to y'all. And good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGBM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, and streaming at kgbm.org, also known as .org. I've recently traveled to places of dark, clear skies, and saw something in the evening sky I could not explain. Well, this next Desert Oracle Radio episode from June 28th, 2019, includes a good amount of such things. Here is Praying to the Aliens.
Check.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Tonight you are not going to know what's true and what's false. On the screen behind us, and you can say, well, is that charitable to Bob Lazar? It doesn't matter. Because enough people believe the story, it resonated enough with the culture that now we all know the story. Whether we believe it or not, or whether our beliefs or our conclusions do not fit into believe it or not. Now, through my own personal research and from wasting most of my life reading dubious UFO groups on the internet, news groups, Above Top Secret, Reddit, and all kinds of books, historical books, recent books, books of research, Blue Book. And an interesting thing is UFO sightings of a certain kind, according to John Keel, the great Fortean journalist who wrote The Mothman Prophecies and lots of other weird stuff. Dusk to twilight is the time when you are most likely to have a close encounter. That means seeing some sort of unidentified aerial phenomena within a couple hundred feet of you, not distant lights in the sky, but something you cannot avoid and cannot escape. Dusk to twilight. And that's coming right up. And if there's anything that a lifetime of being around weird people has taught me, it's that weird things happen when there are a lot of weird people around. That's right. So watch the skies. Look up from the movie every now and then and watch the skies. All this weirdness might conjure up some kind of space devil. Most people who have a lifetime abiding interest in the subject and the series of subjects, they began this baffling and frustrating pursuit, usually in their formative years. Doesn't mean everybody, but usually in their formative years. When you're forming your beliefs about the world. The culture of your formative years, you cannot escape. Anybody here have Sirius XM radio? Very handy for the desert. Sirius XM figured out a long time ago that no matter what differences people have, when they're old, they're going to want to listen to the music from when they're young. And it was interesting a couple of years ago to watch Sirius XM fade out the 20s and 30s channel. Those subscribers were no longer with us. So the culture you grow up in, even if you think it's dumb, I mean, I know from dumb, I grew up in the Reagan years, in the Nixon years, but that's still what you come out of. The little girl who first saw a brilliant ball of daytime light, a globe that she said was as bright as the sun, but it lowered right down into the brush at the end of the pasture where she was standing. And the entity that she grew to know, who would come out of the ball of light and talk to her through her own thoughts and her brain, well, this little girl grew up in a fully Catholic, rural, Southern European location a century ago. The culture she grew up in left no question about what it meant if a ball of brilliant light came out of the sky and a brilliant being of all white light approached, and you could not even make out its features. So she bowed down to it. And even though it kept saying it was the queen of the universe, she decided it meant that it was Mary, the mother of Jesus. You grow up in a world of saints and magic and bleeding statues, angelic visitations, where the main words that are written down that you hear in your formative years are all from a specific theology. You put it all in place. So imagine the world that a nerdy little boy was growing up in the early 1970s. We had Star Trek reruns on the TV every day. We had trippy movies like 2001 about aliens playing for years as midnight movies. And on the TV news at night, the local TV news at night in the early 1970s was like out of a horror movie. And I don't just mean Vietnam and all the bald eagles falling dead out of the sky, cities burning. It was scary because they would have the most terrifying UFO reports on the local news. And in 1973 began a wave, never seen again, a wave of UFO sightings that involved thousands of individual sightings all over the South and the Southeast. From New Orleans and the Gulf to Florida, up into the Carolinas, the mountains. Tennessee suffered weeks and weeks of increasingly insane nightly visitations. From Memphis to Appalachia, every kind of shape, black triangles, motherships, aliens, things walking around. Police saw them, pilots saw them, baffled families unloading groceries. And we finished off this nutty wave in 1973 in Pascagoula, Mississippi. These two good old boys went fishing where they always went fishing, outside the well-guarded, well-lit gates of the shipyard that made Navy ships. And right there, some kind of brilliant ship appears, descends, hovers a few feet off the ground, allegedly, as Jeremy always says. And then the two dumbest aliens anyone has ever seen come bumbling out of this thing, these giant fur-covered one-eyed robots. You wonder who's designing the characters for this stuff. If you grew up in that environment, and you were interested in things like popular science and popular mechanics, putting a jet engine on the back of your car, that kind of stuff, you grew up in the nerdy Southern California engineer dad world. And a lot of people think Skunk Works is only in the desert, in the Antelope Valley. The main part is in Burbank, in the San Fernando Valley. When Fry's, the big computer store there, opened 20 years ago, the motif, the outdoor decor on the facade is a spaceship crashing in with comical little gray Hollywood aliens coming out. We're seeped in the stuff. We see a light in the sky, and before we can figure out if it's a helicopter or a planet that would be there all the time that we'd know about if we put down our phones, we immediately say space aliens. Why? It's our culture. That's right, Sparky. The dogs always start barking before it starts happening. Well, in the late 19th century, an astronomer, appropriate for an astronomy arts theater to be talking about astronomy for a minute before we start talking about space aliens again. This Italian astronomer, in one of the early good telescopes, but not that good, thought he saw what looked like up and down straight canals all over the surface of Mars. It was a big news sensation. Newspapers were very big in the Victorian era. Are there Martians? What are they like? Did they die out? Is there any way we could visit them or they visit us? H.G. Wells was a big fan of the story of the Martian canals. The Martian canals were an artifact of the lens. But it persisted, the idea that there were canals on Mars. It persisted even after we sent robots to Mars. Google has now mapped Mars. You can look at Google Maps Mars. And yet there are people who still believe that there are canals on Mars. With the Martian story established, suddenly all the weird things that happened to people underwent a 60-year process of turning into space aliens. We have all kinds of evidence for UFOs. We have evidence of mass sightings. Sightings like the Phoenix Lights, that even the governor saw before he went to prison for unrelated reasons. And then with his political career done, he's a Republican, but Bill Clinton pardoned him. Bill Clinton pardoned him because he saved Bill Clinton's life when they were swimming together. When they were kids at a summer camp together. They're the aliens. Hudson Valley, New York. Thousands and thousands of people saw the Hudson Valley boomerang. A ship that, if it passed over us here, one wing would be behind that mountain, and one wing would be way behind this movie screen.
despite all these sightings, despite pilots, despite the U.S. Navy last week announcing that they have a new UFO reporting system, because their pilots are being bedeviled by things they don't understand, just like always, ever since we've been flying. Started with the Foo Fighters, Balls of Light. Despite Blue Book, despite the British Ministry of Defense's Black Triangle Report, which is very good. Despite many countries, France, Belgium, the UK, Canada, making their UFO study files public, there's a lot of curiosity about it. We don't have a shred of evidence or even a good hypothesis that any of this stuff has anything to do with intelligent life flying here in spaceships from other planets. It might be. But we all automatically think this now, not because it might be, but because that's how we explain that stuff now. Now you can go look on basic cable and they'll tell you the aliens have always been coming. You can look in the Pentagon today where some of the brass who follow their Christian religion closely are made very nervous about funding these types of studies because their belief is that the things are demons sent by the devil. Well, one man's demon is another woman's ET. The movie you're going to see tonight is about a story that took all the elements of ufology that started in 1979 with the publication of a book about Roswell. The Roswell story we all grew up with since 1979 was not a known story before that. It was never on In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy. So these UFO researchers dredge up this event, and all of a sudden it's an industry. There's one best-selling hardback Roswell book after another. Then something called the Majestic 12 documents are dropped on a Roswell researcher. A canister of film, photocopies of supposed government documents showing that there was a presidential level UFO working study group that fully stage managed over many, many decades the repeated crashes of the world's worst space pilots. And somehow nobody ever found out. Roswell and MJ-12 tells a story of crash-flying saucers from the 1940s and 50s, when the papers supposedly were written, records of meetings between people in the Eisenhower administration and the Truman administration before that. Alien bodies came from later reworkings of the Roswell myth. And that the government was lying about everything all the time was proven by the Pentagon Papers and Watergate. And are these elements combined with the immense desert military-industrial state that includes Groom Lake, Area 51, Nellis, the nuclear test site, Edwards, the supersonic corridor, China Lake, 29 Palms, Fort Irwin, Goldstone, the NASA antenna complex that keeps track of all of our spaceships on the various planets like Mars. That's all there. The story you're going to see now is from there too. This is a story about the desert. Thank you all for coming. I hope you enjoy the movie. I hope when you're done with the movie that you'll wonder about it. You'll wonder about what you thought about the story beforehand, what you think about it now. There's some truth in the story. What nobody can figure out is what that truth actually is. But it seems kind of important. Now I'm going to introduce you to my friend and comrade, my brother in weird studies, the documentary maker from Extraordinary Beliefs, Mr. Jeremy Corbell. Now watch this mic, it's kind of hot. You're in for a treat. Jeremy's going to say a little something. And then after the movie, we're going to do a Q&A with you. So have your questions ready.
Hey, guys. Thanks for coming out tonight. It's a beautiful night, yeah? I can't think of a better place to screen this film. You know, this all started in the desert. And we definitely have the desert represented here tonight. This movie was a passion of mine since I was a young kid, 13 years old. I heard this story, like maybe many of you, about Bob Lazar. Have you heard the story of Bob Lazar before? Great. So if you haven't, you're going to hear it tonight. And what's unique is after 30 years of coming out and telling this story through George Knapp, the investigative reporter at Las Vegas, Nevada, who broke this story. Yeah, George is awesome. He's my mentor in journalism, and this was his story. This is his story with Bob Lazar. And we now have an opportunity to view Bob's account. Whether you believe it or not, we get to view it through a completely different lens 30 years later now. I'm really excited Bob decided, you know, agreed to talk with me about this because he was relatively silent for 30 years. And he got beat up. He got beat up by the UFO community, by the scientific community. But after 30 years, he decided it was important to tell his story again, and he let me do it through a form of documentary so we can reach millions of people with it. And now, through the lens of 30 years, we now know that our government has admitted to maintaining UFO programs on your behalf. That was admitted in 2017 in the New York Times, ATIP, Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. Additionally, just 2 days ago, the Navy said that they're putting another method in place to take in Navy and government accounts of pilots who engage these craft of unknown origin. So it's a unique time in human history that we're getting a little bit of the truth from those who were suppressing the truth before. So it gives us a different way to look at what Bob Lazar said and what he says today. If what Bob Lazar is telling you is true, it is an absolute game changer to the way we view ourselves in this universe. So, enjoy the movie. It will entertain you. Mickey Rourke narrates it, which is desert cool. Yeah. And afterwards, there will be a Q&A. It's a great opportunity. There's a lot to think about with this movie, and I'll try to answer your questions if I know them. It was quite a journey making this film. So, again, thanks for being here to watch the movie. And, you know, thanks to Ken Lane. Who can do a UFO sermon like Ken Lane? Nobody but Ken Lane. After the Q&A, you're going to also have a live performance from a dear friend of mine. She runs and owns La Copine. If you ain't done nothing right in your life till you've gone to La Copine for food. It's amazing. Claire, she'll be here to sing a few songs, one of my favorites. And most importantly, I want to thank Red, Blue, Black, Silver, who, the only reason we're here is because of him. He said, we're doing this. We're doing this in the desert, man. So, thank you for putting this on. Yeah. And one last thing before the movie starts, we might have to adjust the screen a little bit. I'm not sure, because we have to center it. But if you haven't seen or haven't heard of The Miracle of Pioneer Town, you gotta drive up Pioneer Town Road at night, and you will see a USO, Unidentified Standing Illuminated Object. Check it out. Grinch hunting is real. Okay, movie will start in a second here.
A UFO sermon, as it was billed, really an introduction to a screening of Bob Lazar's Area 51 and Flying Saucers at the Joshua Tree Astronomy Arts Theater a couple of months ago. Take a look at our website, desertoracle.com, and on our radio page, you'll see some pictures of this sermon taken by Natalie Ball. I think it's Ball and not Baal, like the former Lord God of Canaan. And there are some things in one of these pictures, wonders seen in the sky, that are not in the other pictures. What do you think they are? From Amboy to Zizix and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this has been Desert Oracle Radio, and I am your host, Ken Lane. We broadcast from KCDZ-FM in Joshua Tree and are distributed by Public Radio Exchange. And that Bob Lazar movie is out on Netflix now, so take a look if you haven't seen it. Get our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Try Spotify or iTunes or Art19. Thank you for listening, and good night from the Voice of the Desert.
My thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver, and to Ken Lane for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to all the volunteers, supporters, and underwriters that support KGVM. Think about becoming one yourself. Well, this program broadcasts on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are archived for you on the kgvm.org website. Watch those skies, stay well, keep doing good things, and sweet dreams. See you next week.